Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. And at this time on Tuesdays, we head over to West End. We bring in Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason. He knows a little bit about being smooth. He's smoother than smooth, and he's on the line with us. Coach, how you doing?
What's going on, fellas? Hope everybody's doing okay and everybody's had a chance to get out and vote.
Yeah, good message. Yes, and we have, and it is a beautiful day. No excuses. Beautiful day here in Middle Tennessee. I want to ask you, albeit in a loss, but just this season, what you've seen out of Ken Seals and how you feel about Ken Seals to this point. Because you, even when you haven't recorded a win yet, I'm just curious, you know, what's your evaluation as a staff right now of what you've seen out of your quarterback?
Ken Seals is a talented quarterback who can play in the SEC. The games, been not too big for him. And he likes to compete, doesn't get rattled. He's been able to, work on the things that he needs to work on in order to get better. And I think, as he's gotten better, the guys around him, have been able to, maybe sort of start to make their presence felt a little bit. I think your quarterback, it has to be somebody that can not only lead, but somebody can sort of make the plays and divvy the ball and make good decisions about how the ball does get distributed and how you function. And, this young man's ceiling is extremely high. Having, Kyle Strummer on the staff, and working with him. I mean, Kyle's, talked to me, in a couple of times just about how mature he is and how much of a football gym rat he is. And that's what you want out of your quarterback. So the ceiling is high. Both him and Mike Wright are, extremely talented. But what we've seen, thus far from Ken is a great sample size of what's to come.
That's exactly where I was going next, and you led me right there because I wanted to ask you that because you have had a guy like Kyle Strummer. You've coached a guy that knows what it takes to win week in and week out and what it takes behind the scenes to have success at this level. The SEC, as you know, and he knows is difficult. And Kyle Strummer brought the leadership in the room and he knew all the stuff that you need. And I knew he was on your staff, and so I was curious if, your conversations with Kyle and just your thoughts of how you guys collectively felt, does this guy have the makeup moving forward, just to keep getting better and better in the SEC and for your team?
Yeah, I mean, he's got the makeup, to be, what we need here at Vanderbilt in order to be successful and win. And, he's going to be challenged. I mean, the good thing about it is that, him and Mike Wright are both competitive but not combative. They're each other's biggest cheerleader, in there. But when it comes to stepping on the field, both of those dudes, want to go at each other, make each other better. And I think that's what you got to have. You got to have competition, but you also got to have, leadership and sort of personalities that sort of lend themselves to being able to, force themselves on guys in terms of, making the room uncomfortable, but also being able to lead, like when things aren't necessarily going the way you want it to go. And Ken has that about him. It's shown over the last 3 weeks. I thought it was, on display on Saturday as he had his best game as a Commodore. And Kyle came in after the game on Sunday and said, "Hey, Coach, man, I think this young man's got a chance to go get some records." So that's what you want to hear. That's what we want to see. But now what we got to do is, put that to the test this week as we turn towards Mississippi State.
Yep. You talk about makeup. How confident are you in the makeup of your room that these guys can dig themselves out of this and they can stay on the path and, have the results that you're looking for? Because, it gets tougher. The more losses pile up, it gets tougher. And you learn a lot about your room. What makes you confident the makeup of your room can have these guys keep battling week in and week out?
Well, you've got to start with the idea of where you compete. And I thought even as that game sort of shifted, underneath our feet a little bit, like guys still competed in that ball game. In the end, you still saw guys coming at it. You still saw guys, you know, like working. I mean, the last couple of – we scored on one opportunity and then had a chance, you know, late in that ball game to try to score again. So this and we got some defensive stops late in that ball game. And I think with that, it shows that the group has the makeup, okay? But what we've got to be able to do is find the end game, you know, make confidence and ability to be able to weather storms in order to move forward. And that's sort of what the leadership talked to me about, you know, like after that ball game. You know, look, I mean, like sometimes things don't go your way. I thought offensively had good rhythm, some good pace of what we were doing, sort of stopped ourselves a little bit, a couple penalties got stalled. Defensively, like that was a different deal. I mean, we were chasing it all day, and when you're chasing it, you know, you got to find a way to stop it. You got to find a way to get it stopped, and we didn't. And with that, some of that confidence, some of that guys being back, you know, all those things, you can make all the excuses in the world, and those guys didn't make any excuses. Okay, man, I told them, I said, man, I'll own every bit of it. What I need you to do, okay, like right now, okay, just like us, continue to make the investment, understand that, you know, this thing is never going to be easy. Okay, man, but it starts with the idea of getting it stopped, and then from there, just making this thing about getting back to the middle. And when you do that, man, you're going to have a chance to compete, to win, and to get everything that you want. But you got to be able to, you know, go through it to get to it.
We're talking to Derek Mason, head football coach at Vanderbilt. And, Coach, the mental side of it, no question, is huge. Now, as far as your scheme, we know Ole Miss is an elite offense. They've been lighting it up against everybody, but where does it start for you? Is it more up front? It seemed like the spread, as they got you guys spread out, they had a lot of space to work with. They have some athletes. So where do you start to rein in scheme-wise to try to get a little foundation you can work off of?
Yeah, it, you know, everybody would like to think that it starts up front. But, you know, like in this, when you're playing like a team like that, and we were playing like a different front, you know, one less guy up front. Most of that game was played in some three down, four down at times. But you know, when you got more guys in coverage than you do rushing the passer, okay, the reliance is on the secondary to play top down to buy time for the rush to get home, and we didn't do that. So this thing is about, you know, putting those guys in different positions, better positions. Maybe playing a little more role coverage to, you know, top receivers and being able to make sure, man, if we take, you know, pressure off of the one-on-one matchup so that the rush can get home. You know, but there were times where we brought pressure and guys fell. You know, that can't happen. So, again, I mean, the blame starts with, you know, staff, okay, and myself, and then it permeates down. Everybody's got to own it, okay, and we're doing that. We're going to see a different ball team this week, man. We'll play a different style of ball, and we'll let the ball speak for us. But that wasn't what we wanted. And now, you know, after getting back to work, everybody sees where the holes are, and now what you do, man, you fix it, you move on. It's all information, and what we got to do is make it come alive.
Let's flip to the offensive side. I saw some nice things. We just talked about Ken Seals and how he looks like he's making the right decisions. He's got some really good tools. I see Cam Johnson is an outstanding possession receiver. Bresnahan continues to look good. Do you have anybody else that you feel can emerge to get you, maybe it's the guys I just mentioned, but be able to mix in a couple of more big plays? Because I see an offense that is driving the ball pretty well, but you're not getting maybe as many explosive plays as you might like to have, as you've had in the past with a guy like Keyshawn Vaughn.
Yeah, I think there's guys there that can make explosive plays. I thought Chris Pierce, you know, had a big boy catch down in the red zone where, you know, he goes over the top of one of Ole Miss's DBs to make a catch. I think, I mean, he may have had, you know, several big catches in that ball game, like for him. But I think between Bostic, Pierce, and Amir, okay, those are three guys right there. They're 6'3 plus. They're big. They're big targets. You know, like for us, they got to win their one-on-ones, and they're all capable. Obviously, more balls went to Cam just because of the situations we were in, and he was the open guy. I mean, I think that's where the offense has been simplified. Throw the ball to the open guy. But when the ball does come your way, you got to go make plays. And those guys with those frames, with those catch radiuses, and with their ability to sort of stretch the field, those are the guys that have got to start coming up big for us. They've been big at different times. We just need the consistency from week to week.
Derek Mason is with us, Vanderbilt football coach. And specifically on Cam Johnson, though, I mean, last week it was off the RPOs. That's where he was targeted a lot, and that seemed to work. But what have you seen from him specifically that has helped him grow into that position?
Yeah, part of it is Coach Fitch, you know, understanding, you know, I mean, what our quarterback needs and what we need to do at different times to be able to get, you know, whether it's speed and space or whether it's the ability to attack, you know, soft zones. I mean, like, what can we do? You like there. And Cam's reliable, like, with his skill set and how he understands football. I mean, he can play inside. He can play outside. Like, he knows how to, you know, a runaway from man. He knows how to find the soft spots in zones. Those things are important, but he works at it every day. You know, the best part of what a player can do is be available. And, like, Cam's missed maybe one or two practices in the time that he's been here. So for me, you know, when guys are available and they show up to work every day, you know, like, those are the guys that are the glue guys for your football team. If you're looking for go-to players, okay, like, those guys are the guys that show up every day. And when you call their name, okay, they always show up. And Cam's one of those guys.
I did want to ask you, I know you you brought this up in your press conference earlier, but Drew Birchmeyer, Anthony Orji, what the latest is with their injuries and their status for this week?
Yeah, unfortunately, we still haven't received, like, the latest information, but we should have something, you know, hopefully by later today. There was a few tests that had to be rechecked, like, in this. There are some that are possibly thought to be some false positives. So, like, with that being said, man, we're just waiting on confirmation. And, you know, once we have that, we'll correct and redirect what our lineup looks like.
Yeah, I understand that for sure. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and good luck against Mississippi State. We'll do it again next week.
Hey, get out and vote. Enjoy the day. Let's anchor down.
Absolutely. Coach Derek Mason at Vanderbilt joins us every Tuesday at 1 o'clock when we come back. Mitch Light, Mitch after Mason from The Athletic. But first, D-Mac, tell us about DraftKings.
Sure, I will. I'll do that. DraftKings, it's live right here in our beautiful state of Tennessee. Mobile sports betting, it's up and running. Yes, that's DraftKings. You may know them as the leading daily fantasy brand, but they have taken their passion for sports and developed America's top-rated sportsbook app. This isn't some offshore operation like a lot of other gambling sites. DraftKings is legitimate sportsbook based right here in the U.S., and with DraftKings Sportsbook app, you can bet from wherever, whenever. You don't even have to leave your house. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app. Right now, use the code 1025GAME. When you sign up for a limited time, all new users will get a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Did you hear me? Use the code 1025GAME and get your deposit bonus up to $1,000. That's only on DraftKings Sportsbook app. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, you want help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey, smoother than smooth. Mitch Light from The Athletic is on the line with us. We talk college football with him and the SEC right after Derek Mason every Tuesday on the program. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good. Darren, that was, I know it's not your choice, maybe Elijah, that was kind of mellow music leading in. I'm not the most, you know, usually I like to get motivated, get fired up for this. I'm kind of laid back now.
Okay, well,
I felt like we were on an elevator.
Yeah. I'm a professional mood setter.
Ah, yeah, yes, you are.
There you go.
That's fine. That's fine. I can get ready. I can. Hey, you know my college football teams this year with not many fans there? They got to self-motivate. I can do that. I can get fired up on my own.
Maybe they could have used this music at halftime for the Missouri-Florida game to keep maybe the tempers under control. The SEC doled out some penalties yesterday as Florida gets ready for their big tilt against Georgia. And we really have not been able to, unfortunately, and I've wanted to get to this, Mitch, so I just kind of have pushed it off to the side and said, well, I'm going to make sure I get to it with you. I got to be honest. I am surprised at the lack of, and maybe I'm missing it here, maybe there has been, a discussion of Dan Mullen's actions on Saturday, which I thought was completely out of control for a head coach in the SEC, and why he didn't get hammered more than he did. He is just as much of a problem as his kids were, his student athletes. Him running out there like a maniac trying to chase and grab anybody could, to me, only enhanced or incited what took place. I thought his actions were an absolute failure. He deserved an F as a head coach, and he's kind of blown it off like he didn't do anything wrong, and I completely disagree. How do you feel about what took place?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought it was completely uncalled for. You look to head coaches at times like that to calm their teams down, and the way he raced across the field, you know, incites kind of the right word, I think, there. He poured kind of lighter fluid on a volatile situation. And, you know, I understand. It's funny because he admitted afterwards he didn't even see the late hit on Kyle Trask, which was definitely a late hit. It was dirty. It wasn't the most egregious thing you'll ever see. He just kind of saw the reaction, and he sprinted across the field. And if you recall 2 years ago, similar thing happened at Vanderbilt and he almost came to blows with Derek Mason, who's kind of like the most popular guy in coaching. Everyone likes Coach Mason. That was different because it was on the Florida sideline, so he didn't have to sprint across the field. And then, you know, I'm sure you also saw he goes into the tunnel, and then he comes out,
yes,
and he waves his arms three or four, yes, times for the Florida fans that were there. And then, you know, he shows up in the Darth Vader costume and for Halloween afterwards, only fined $25,000. I mean, he's got kind of a reputation as a hothead, obviously, two incidents there. And our Alan Taylor, who writes for us, covers the Florida State Athletic, kind of wrote a story afterwards. He's like, you know, as long as he's got his team behind him, he doesn't care. And he does. So, you know, $25,000 to him is nothing. He probably doesn't really care about his reputation. He doesn't think he did much wrong there. But I'm with you. It's hard to say how much attention something got. I mean, I saw a lot about it, but you know, maybe it wasn't because if it was the Florida-Georgia game, it would have been different. But it was the Florida-Missouri game, which was on ESPN, was on SEC Network Alternate, which for me on DirecTV, they didn't even put it on until midway through the second quarter. I was actually watching it online, and it wasn't a very high-profile game. But I'm with you there. That's just very sometimes we say things aren't becoming of the president. That's not becoming of a head coach in the SEC.
Yeah. Agreed. I just thought he would get hammered more, and quite honestly, I thought it was a pretty pathetic response by the league. I mean, $25,000 fine to Dan Mullen? I mean, you might as well just – I mean, that's like fining us a dollar. I mean, what message did that send to him? I didn't think it sent a message at all, and I thought he was way out of control on Saturday. And like you said, I'm glad you brought that up. The coming back out and, you know, getting the crowd up, it's like – what you just did was not even acceptable, and you came out for an encore? Give me a break.
I'm with you. I'm with you 100%.
All right, so how do you think this Florida-Georgia game is going to play out, with that being said?
I'm fascinated by it. You know, this has been a interesting series. I just did some research on it, and they've alternated three-game winning streaks. Over the last 12 years, it's been, you know, Florida 3, Georgia 3, Florida 3, and Georgia 3. And Georgia's the team that's currently on the streak right now. And they have done a really, really good job defensively against Florida in the last 3 years. I think Florida's averaging like 270 yards in the last 3 years against Georgia. They have really shut them down. I thought Florida played probably its best game on Saturday when you considered the opponent. Not that Missouri's great, but they played well. They were missing some guys in the secondary. Now, they did get some – Kyrie Campbell, really good senior defensive tackle, came back, really short up that defensive line. So I thought they played very well. Kadarius Toney's a guy we've been hearing about for 3 or 4 years as a playmaker and has never really found a role. He's tied for the team lead with, I think, 10 touchdowns with Kyle Pitts. So I think they're going to cause some problems for Georgia's defense. It's a great, good offense, good defense, and, you know, flip it on the other side, you know, other side of the ball. So I think it's an intriguing matchup. I still think Georgia is the more talented team. If you look at recruiting rankings, Florida clearly has the edge at quarterback and probably at the skill position. So, you know, we're going to find out how important quarterback play is. And Andy Staples had a column on the Athletic today about what a big game it is for both coaching staffs. Not that either guy's on the hot seat by any stretch, but it's a game that both fan bases expect to win. I keep talking here, Darren, because I haven't decided who I'm going to pick yet. I'd probably lean towards Georgia, just the overall talent edge there. But I'm really intrigued by this Florida team, especially the way they played Saturday night.
Yeah. Speaking of Georgia, I watched a lot of their game against Kentucky. It was a tough watch. Georgia was in control. I know the final was 14-3, but I never felt like Kentucky was ever going to win that game. But I do want to talk about the Kentucky side of things. Their defense just
continued.
Before
you go on, Darren, quick interruption there, because I never want to talk about Kentucky. I was surprised by this after watching a decent amount of that game. From a yards per play, that was Georgia's best offensive game of the year. They just didn't have many plays. They averaged 6.1 yards per play. That's their best of the season, which surprised me. But so go ahead on Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, look, rarely do you see a game that finished 14-3 and you say a team was in control. But I felt like Georgia was in control the entire game, and yet the final was 14-3. Kentucky has really surprised me with their defense. I mean, I don't see a bunch of dudes, you know, like guys that stand out where you go, whoa, you'll be seeing them on Sundays. But I'll tell you what, it works. You know, whatever they're doing right now, it works. But I want to ask you about the things on the offense, which are abysmal. They're not a good offensive team. Joey Gatewood was that his first ever start? Is that right? First ever start?
Yeah.
Big body, big frame. I could not have been, and I know it's his first start ever, but big kid. I thought he was slow. I just was not impressed at all. Indecisive, didn't really know what to do. Let's just say my first impression, not very good. What did you make of Gatewood, and is it just, you just chalk it up his first start, and it's Georgia, and you think he'll get a whole lot better, or what do you think?
Yeah, I want to see more. I mean, I think that's the first start and the fact that it's against Georgia. You got a coaching staff that doesn't feel great about itself offensively. They're not going to really – I think their goal was not to fall behind too quickly, that they thought if they could keep it within one or two scores, they didn't want to screw things up and maybe get a lucky bounce or, you know, pick six or two like they did against Tennessee. So I think it was a pretty conservative game plan. He was a top – I think he's a top 100 national recruit, you know, at Auburn. A big recruit, lost his job to Bo Nixon and transferred. So I wouldn't quite give up on Joey Gatewood by any stretch. But I'm kind of surprised, like you are, with both the offense struggling, because I've been a big Eddie Grant fan. I think he's an underrated coordinator. They kind of reinvent themselves every year based on their talent or lack thereof. What we saw last year where they had to, you know, bring a wide receiver and play quarterback. And defensively, they don't have a Josh Allen. Not that many schools have a Josh Allen or, you know, school of like Kentucky. And then remember a couple, 2 years ago, too, they had that great veteran secondary, some guys in the NFL now. You don't see a bunch of dudes on that side of the ball. So I think it's a team that kind of knows what it is and is going to be very conservative until it feels better about itself offensively. And they're going to have to win games 20-14. But, you know, the last 2 weeks they've really struggled to move the ball. And I know a lot of Kentucky fans were hoping the quarterback change from Terry Wilson to Joey Gatewood would kick that offense, get it going. But I think it's tough to expect that, like I said before, in his first start against a defense like Georgia.
We're talking to Mitch Light, one of the college football editors for Athletic Squad, theathletic.com. Great college football coverage. Mitch, at the risk of making us sound old, which we're getting fast, we've been watching Vanderbilt football for about 30, 35 years now, depending on when we started watching in high school as we started getting interest in Vanderbilt. So that's our reference point. For people that know, it's easy to paint a broad brush and say, for the most part, the program is in a constant state of struggle. They've had some flash points with James Franklin. They've been to a couple of bowls with Derek Mason. But to those who follow every year, like we do, there are different levels of struggle. And this is at a level that reminds me of some teams in the dying times of some coaches, a Watson Brown, a Bobby Johnson, which turned into Robbie Caldwell, basically, a Woody Woodenhofer. Can he get out of this hole? I'm a little concerned. It was just so easy for a mediocre Ole Miss team to go in there and win decisively. What are you seeing there, and is there any kind of material where he can build a foundation to create hope for next year?
Yeah, and I mean, the big picture question, as I was reminding my daughter, who's a sophomore at Vanderbilt, who was, you know, kind of complaining about the football team struggles, I said, my first 2 years in college, Vanderbilt went 1-10 and 1-10.
Right.
So don't talk to me, you know. But and then Jerry DiNardo came in and kind of turned things around. But, yeah, and I will say, I mean, not to defend anything, but, you know, Ole Miss is a very, very good offensive team. I think we predict, you know, I don't think it was going to be that easy, but if you would have told me Ole Miss was going to score 50 points, I would have said, okay, I wouldn't have been shocked. But I thought Vanderbilt could have made it a game more deep into the second half. But, yeah, I mean, the struggles, if the phrase goes, the struggle is real. I mean, the point is, when you're kind of evaluating programs that struggle, you kind of look at how competitive they are. And Vanderbilt's lost 13 games over the last 2 years. Only one of them, the Texas A&M game to start this year, was a margin of defeat fewer than 17 points. That's alarming right there. Because, like, 2018, they went 6-7, go to the bowl game, 5 of the 7 losses by 10 points or fewer. There was a competitive program that could have won some more games. Last 2 years, it's just hasn't been competitive. And the defense has been it had no answer for the run or the pass consistently over the last 2 years. Now, is there hope? You know, I think they found a quarterback in Ken Seals. There's some young pieces on offense that look, you know, fine. But, you know, I think the thing with Vanderbilt right now, if you ask opposing coaches in the league, who scares you on that team? Who do you have to scheme against? There's not many guys. And in the past, there's, you know, even some bad Vanderbilt teams have had some really good future NFL cornerbacks or a linebacker here or there. Then, you know, obviously the last couple of years, there's some really good pieces offensively. I just don't see it right now. Again, I think the quarterback, Ken Seals, can be a good player, can be an SEC-caliber quarterback, but the overall talent on the roster isn't where it needs to be.
It's at a crisis point for sure. I got a couple of national picture questions here, and I know Chase is going to ask you about Tennessee and Arkansas, which is a giant game in the scheme of things for UT. Break down the difference in Clemson's roster and Notre Dame's roster, given that Trevor Lawrence is not in the equation. I watched Clemson. Of course, they struggled with Boston College. Of course, they hit the 14-point swing, which changed a lot of things. There was a lot of things that went Boston College way in the first half, and to Clemson's credit, they didn't lose their poise, and they still came back and won it. But how tough will this game be against the Irish?
You know, to your point, I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm not, you know, when we look at these elite programs, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, if they don't win by 35 points, we look for issues. You know, what's the problem? And Clemson had that, again, they didn't make the play. It was a bad handoff, and BC made the play. But that's a 14-point swing there. And I thought that the play, if you watched the end of the first half, I thought it was a really, really questionable late hit call on against Clemson on the BC quarterback that kept a drive going, and then they scored again there right before the half. So I think more things go Clemson's way, the score's more lopsided. From a talent standpoint, Clemson is the far superior team, and that's no shock there. With some of the injuries they've had there, I don't think they scare you as much at the wide receiver position. Obviously, Travis Etienne, everyone knows how good he is. Notre Dame is solid. When I've watched them this year, I haven't been overly impressed with their skill. Book has been a good quarterback. I don't know how much better he's got than since when he broke into the lineup late in his sophomore year. The running back, Williams, is solid. If this were a normal year and it was a Saturday night at Notre Dame Stadium and it was packed with a quarterback making a second start, first road start, I'd feel a lot better about Notre Dame's chances. But I think this is one where the talent just rises to the top, and I think Clemson wins kind of comfortably.
It'd be something to watch for sure. And what about Ohio State? Are they as advertised in your mind?
Yeah, they're great. I mean, I've watched pretty much every snap of both their games. It's a team with very few weaknesses. Like, they complain, like, I mean, by complain, the media and the fans, the media that's kind of analyzing them, that their running backs aren't as explosive as they need to be, because they had J.K. Dobbins last year, but I mean, Master Teague, we know him from Murfreesboro, and then Trey Sermon, the Oklahoma transfer. Those are good running backs. They're not All-America running backs, but that's like kind of first world problems, that they don't have an All-American running back. So their defensive line played really well against Penn State. That was an area where they were concerned about their depth coming into the year. They played really well there. They've got great wide receivers. And Fields, for whatever reason, just the time of the games didn't, with my work at or doing sidelines at Vanderbilt last year, I didn't see a ton of Ohio State last year. And I know he's probably gotten better, but Fields is amazing. I mean, he's just what he's got.
Joe Rexroad has him number one on his Heisman list. He's got him ahead of Lawrence right now.
Yeah, I do too. We have a Heisman, all the writers and editors at The Athletic, we do a Heisman ballot every week, and I have him number one. I mean, I think he's the best player in the country. He's got, more touchdowns than incomplete passes, and he is
– That's pretty good.
He can beat you with his legs if he needs to, but they don't really need him to or want him to. So I've been, I know more about Ohio State than I ever thought I would, just because it's one of the teams I work closely with the writer. But they are, there's, like you said, the term as advertised, they're as advertised.
We're talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic, all things college football here on the show. So Willie mentioned it, Tennessee, Arkansas this weekend. Tennessee, a 1.5-point favorite. They've had inconsistent play at quarterback, whereas Arkansas, Felipe Franks transfers in from Florida, and he's been pretty solid for them. And Sam Pittman, first-year head coach, seems to have that program, I'm not going to say fully turned around at 2-3, but looking a lot better than people thought that they would. So what are your initial thoughts on this matchup on Saturday?
Yeah, and I think we talked last week, and I don't get a lot of games right, but I'll pat myself on the back. I've thought, well, I guess I got it wrong, because I thought A&M would cover, the old backdoor cover by Arkansas. I thought that was going to be kind of a market correction game for Arkansas, where they were forcing a ton of turnovers. They led the league with 10 interceptions, and that's not very sustainable. So they went down to College Station, a rare Texas A&M Arkansas game on campus. You know, they usually play in Dallas. I think it was the first one on campus since 2012. And, you know, got handled by a good Texas A&M team. You know, from an overall talent standpoint, Tennessee's a better team. But as we've talked about all year, Arkansas has talent. That wasn't the problem the last few years. They were awful, but they had some talent on that roster. I think I will pick Tennessee going into that game. I don't think they are as bad. Well, they're not as bad as they played the last two times we saw them. I think it's obviously an important game in the one loss for Jeremy Pruitt, whether they win or lose. But I'm eager to see how they look. Because if they come out and lay an egg on the road after the bye week, after the two previous performances, then the heat really gets going. It's sort of like, you know, what have you been doing the last 2 weeks? Right. Especially after the Alabama game and the Kentucky game. I think they'll play well. I think they'll be able to run the ball. They can run the ball, take some pressure off Garantano. That will obviously help some things. What you obviously don't want to do is go in there, make an early mistake, and you get the here-we-go-again thing going. But they're playing an Arkansas team that probably still feels pretty good about itself, and Tennessee's probably looking around, not quite sure how to feel about itself, and wondering if it can play well on the road.
Why do you think it's worked so well with Sam Pittman? Because he was a position coach, I didn't know much about him, but it seems like he's come in there and really they've bought in so far to him as a head coach.
Yeah, he made great hires. Barry Odom, defensive coordinator, who, you know, going back to his days at Memphis, was kind of young, up-and-coming coordinator. Didn't work out for him in Missouri, but they, you know, had good defenses there. And then Kendall Briles, good coordinator, good young coordinator. And like I said, they inherited some talent. Getting the quarterback situation was solidified. That was a revolving door the last few years of transfers. But Franks has done a good job. They have some good running backs, some good young running backs. The one thing they did recruit well the last couple of years is receivers. And Pittman is just, you know, he's beloved by his players. Now, it's one thing to be beloved by your offensive lineman. You know, most offensive linemen love their position coach. But to transfer that as the CEO of the program, he's been able to do that. And, yeah, I don't know if you, you know, I know Willie knows Kyle Parkinson, who used to be the Vanderbilt baseball media relations director and then went over to football for a year before going back to his alma mater at Arkansas. And I talked to Kyle this summer, and he was just telling me, like, we got the right guy. I mean, this guy's, he's amazing. All of a sudden, I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, you hear that all the time. First year coach hasn't coached the game. But it matters. That stuff matters. You know, first year, getting guys to buy in, they are completely bought in, and having results early helped. Even though they lost that Georgia game, the way they played coming out of the gates after all that losing that team did, anybody who was on the fence in that locker room, they were in Sam Pittman's corner after that. So, you know, football's, it's a coaching game. And you know, still early in his tenure, but it looks like they got the right guy there.
You said you're going Tennessee?
Yes, I think going Tennessee. Is it the best game of the weekend? No, but it's
intriguing.
It's one of the most interesting games of the weekend, no doubt about that.
I lean Arkansas, so we'll see how it turns out. Appreciate the time as always, Mitch. We'll do it again next week.
All right, sounds good, Chase. Take care, bud.
Mitch Light, The Athletic, joins us. Mitch after Mason is what we call it, after Derek Mason, every week here on the show. Darren Donick and Chase, we'll wrap it up next. But first, Darren, tell us about Cool Springs MD.
I will, and I have been for years, you know, if you've been listening to this show, because I've been going there for years. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, who is the board-certified physician, his wife Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff have been helping me, along with a lot of you, here in the Middle Tennessee area. They've been doing it since 2007 in a lot of categories. Man, they house a lot of things under one roof, and they would love to improve your quality of life. I know I want that, and hopefully you do too. And maybe you haven't been feeling the same lately. You've been feeling off, like something's not right. Well, go in there and talk to them about hormone replacement therapy, because typically as we get older, your levels go down, and when your levels go critically down, it can really affect how you feel. It can really affect your day-to-day operations. You just feel really off or sluggish. You just don't have any, you know, get up and go to you, and you can't figure out why. Maybe you've always been active, but you haven't been lately. Well, they can certainly help you in that way. Face and body rejuvenation, weight loss management, certainly we understand that in 2020. Maybe you've put on some unwanted pounds. Maybe when your local gym that you're in a routine and working out closed for a good while, and since it's reopened, you just haven't been able to get back into it. Everybody gets it. Well, they've got programs and people that can get you headed in the right direction. If you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation, just pick up the phone and dial 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can learn everything you need to know about them on their website by going to coolspringsmd.com. Little Alice in Chains bringing us back. I totally botched that.
I think that was they were contemplating. They were contemplating calling themselves that, maybe. Alice in the Chains.
Alice and the Wonderland.
Darren, you got it. 2 o'clock, then you start drinking the Blue Note.
I know.
Okay? Come on.
I know. I should have just said AIC. Oh, boy. I like that song.
Yeah.
By the way, our NFL Game of the Week this Sunday on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. Our game will be the Steelers and the Cowboys, which used to always be a Game of the Week. I don't know about this year. Cowboys have kind of ruined that. But Steelers and Cowboys was always a huge matchup. Coverage begins at 3 p.m., kickoff at 3:25. The Dallas Cowboys are an absolute hot mess.
Well, Andy Dalton has the virus.
Yep.
I just saw an Ian Rappaport
and a concussion
thing. Right. So we know the concussion kept him out. We don't. I mean, you were just thinking, well, another week maybe that would be in the rear view, but now he's got issues with COVID, and they're talking about activating a guy off the practice squad
to start.
To start. Yeah.
At quarterback. Yeah, I know. That's why I was bringing it up. Yeah, they're thinking about starting a practice squad quarterback as their starter this week. So
shows
luck.
You how they felt about DiNucci's performance, the sidearm slinger.
Good luck with that.
Cooper Rush.
Coop, sure.
Not anybody related. Know anything about him?
No, doesn't know. Cooper
I didn't know anything
Cup,
about
I don't think.
DiNucci.
No, I didn't even.
Does he like Rush? That's a good band.
Don't know.
Be a great rock star name.
Good question.
Cooper Rush.
I agree. That is a cool name, but
live.
Don't know anything
concert.
About it.
The two last names name? Rush Cooper, Cooper Rush. Either way would work.
I saw this. I was reading it this morning. You know, Mookie Betts is trying to win the NL MVP award. If he were to win, and I'm not, I don't think he's going to win.
He's not.
But if he does.
But we love Mookie.
Do you know what company he would be or whose company he would be with? Because there's only been one other player to do it, and that's win an MVP in both leagues.
Frank Robinson.
The late, great Frank Robinson back in the 60s.
There's only been one?
Exactly. That's what I thought. I was like,
there's been a couple guys that have won the Cy Young in both leagues, but only one player has ever won the
Frank
MVP
Robinson
in both
is
leagues.
Is the only player in Major League Baseball history to be an MVP in both leagues. I couldn't believe that. I thought, there's got to be more than one. Nope.
Wow.
Pretty good company, huh? If that were to happen. I don't think he's going to win. Who do we think is going to win?
Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
Freddie.
I think Freddie's going to probably get it.
I do too. I hope so.
But Mookie is getting into the category that Mike Trout is in, where and Michael Jordan and a lot of the elite
LeBron
players.
James.
Right. Mm-hmm. You theoretically could have him in there every year, and it's just
like Nick
it's
Saban.
Him on an average year against the guy that has his best year.
Nick Saban never wins Coach of the Year.
Right. That's another good example.
You know? Yeah. Because, in other words, you just expect him to be like that. You take for granted what they, you know, bring year in and year out. And then when you have a breakout of like a Bellinger or somebody, they always win it, right? It's the guy that, you know, comes out. Like these guys, it's like, oh, yeah, Trout and Betts. Yeah, they're really good. Like we know what they do. Oh, but what about the season? This guy, nobody saw that guy. So they tend to your point, they tend to give it to that person. Rather than the one that everybody has identified and knows is an MVP every year.
Yeah, for example, Mike Trout had a year where he had an unbelievable year, and he had a lot of the analytics that were in his. But Miguel Cabrera hit for the Triple Crown, so they gave it to Cabrera, which made plenty of sense. I remember we got into a great debate about that, whether that was right or not. But how could you argue giving it to a guy that won the Triple Crown, right? But like, and there was a year that Mike Trout won it, where Mookie Betts had clearly an MVP type of year, but only one could win it. And then he, of course, did win it in the American League. So that it could be a close vote. Mookie has an argument, for sure, but Freddie Freeman had a heck of a year.
He does, and you know, obviously, being the Braves fan, if Mookie won, I would still be happy because it's Mookie. But I think that this is Freddie's year. And that's one thing he's, you know, obviously this was the best postseason run he's been in because they won a series, which they hadn't done since 2001. So that was big. And now a regular season award, albeit a different regular season, still would be huge for the profile of Freddie Freeman and what could potentially – I don't know how you guys feel about, you know, a Hall of Fame discussion with him. I don't think he's there yet, but certainly these accolades won't hurt.
Agreed. I think he's on a great track, Freddie Freeman.
Yeah.
As is Mookie.
Oh, absolutely.
Way too early in my mind for that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, it just...
I mean, you no question. The longevity
been
is
around
a
for
big,
10 years.
Big element.
That's
yeah,
the
that,
crazy
that is,
part.
That is the, like, Don Mattingly would be a great example of a guy that... For about 8 or 10 years, you're like, oh, sure, Don Mattingly, he's going to make the Hall of Fame. And then he had the back injury, and suddenly, boom, he wasn't the same player, and he didn't quite get there. So things can happen, for sure. Hopefully that doesn't happen to Freddie Freeman, but he's tracking really, really well for his age.
Wisconsin in the Big Ten with 14 teams. Wisconsin-Purdue, that game, off. So the Badgers.
They won't be ready. They still have 15 guys, 15 players, and then 27 overall in the program that are being affected by the virus. So, Darren, this is maybe the big picture thing is if they miss one more game, they will not be eligible to play in the Big Ten championship game if it got there.
Yep. And that's why I brought that up with Scott Ramsey about possibly, and I know I knew he wasn't going to touch it. I get it. He wasn't going to touch it, you know, them moving it. But remember, the Pac-12 starts this week. So this weekend there's going to be another conference, a Power 5 conference, joining the fold. And so, you know, how long is it before Pac-12 games start getting canceled? And I just wonder, as we've talked about, by the way, Wisconsin's supposed to be really good. Now, you know, like Ohio State good, but supposed to be really good, top 10 team. And if they play six games and they're not eligible, and so there's no discussion of trying to just prolong this and make this a little bit longer because, or you just tough luck, you made your bed, you made your decision way too early, and, you know, sucks to be you. I don't know.
So many questions. So many questions. Let's take the Pac. This is why I was trying to get into who decides who's eligible to go to a bowl game. Let's say, you know, there could be a really high-profile team that goes 2-3 in the Pac-12. And you say, well, you know, they're a pretty good team. They were missing some guys, and they missed a game over here. They're 2-3, but we'd love to have them in our bowl game. People will watch that game. Like, what's the worst record or what's the fewest games that we might see that actually plays in the bowl game? I'm really intrigued by that. It's going to be pretty wacky.
We're going to find out.
Yeah, yep. It's going to be pretty wacky.
And what's even going to be more wacky is if you have, like, a 3-win team against a 7-win team and the 3-win team wins.
It could happen.
It'll be like the, you know, high school playoffs of, you know, everybody gets in and then you have the – I can remember doing the high school show, and there was a team that I can't remember if they had no wins or won, but because of the number of schools that were in the division, they still got in, and they won two games in the playoffs.
It's that way this year.
Remember, they've only dropped.
Of all years, it's probably more like that this year, isn't it, Elijah?
There is one winless team in the playoffs this year, and that is Hancock County at 0-8, are playing 9-0 Coalfield in single A in the playoffs. So that's going to be a mega matchup.
The playoff found winless team. Wow.
Well, we know they've only dropped four or five bowls, and so they're still at like 37?
37 bowls.
37 bowls. I mean, where are you going to find all those teams? I mean, it's going to be teams with crappy – I mean, three wins for sure. We're going to be in a – if you're going to play 37 bowl games, there's going to be three-win teams in bowl games for sure. So get ready. I guess the question is, what will be the lowest – right, what's going to be the worst record we're going to see in a bowl game? 2-win team? Does that happen?
Is it 2-3 or is it 2-6?
I don't know. Or is it 2-8? It's 2-8. I don't
really
know.
There really are no rules.
Nope.
Give me two winless teams.
If you're going to have a bowl, you got to field two teams, so somebody's got to get in. I don't, you know, there may be at some point they're like, I don't care what their record is. We need a team, so we'll take them. I don't know. It'll be interesting. All right, that'll do it for Tuesday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Enjoy this beautiful day here in Middle Tennessee, but we want you back with us. Stay safe. Back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then. Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay.